Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. Well, for most school kids in Massachusetts, summer is pretty much over. Happy back to school, everybody.
Maybe we should actually be saying happy back to school for all the parents who survived this summer. But anyway, today we thought we'd talk a little bit about what's become a powerful trend in education, and that's gender-based teaching.
Now, folks have probably heard about some of the research around this, that boys and girls have different brains, that they learn differently.
Yeah, I mean, for example, Adam, being a guy, maybe he's about to leap up out of his chair and dive across the table to challenge me to a duel because, well, boys are more physical and learn better through competition.
And Meghna, of course, being a girl, well, she's going to handle the moment by talking through it and cooperating with me because girls are more verbal and work better in groups.
Well, people actually know me would know that that's absolutely not true, but still.
No comment.
In fact, but seriously, pieces of this research have become so persuasive in educational circles that some schools are actually experimenting with separating boys and girls into different classrooms. And schools that have tried it say it helps everyone learn better.
But our guests today call it something else entirely. They call it the new segregation. And they say that all the academic hype about the genders being different is hurting both boys and girls at school.
And they've written a new book about it. It's titled The Truth About Girls and Boys: Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. The authors are both here with me, Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
I should say Carol Rivers is a professor of journalism at Boston University, and Rosalind Barnett is a senior social scientist at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. This isn't the first time you've authored a book together. You also have co-authored Same Difference: How Gender Myths Are Hurting Our Relationships, Our Children, and Our Jobs. So thinking about gender and the so-called differences between them has been on your minds for quite some time. But I wonder if I might just start by asking you to walk us briefly through what Adam and I were hinting at, that there's this body of research out there that seems to suggest that children, even from the youngest of ages, show marked differences between boys and girls.
It's largely junk science. There was a very good book, Pink Brain, Blue Brain, where a neuroscientist looked at almost all the research on boys and girls from birth to adolescence and found hardly any differences in the brains of boys and girls. So this nonsense is that boys naturally are nonverbal, girls naturally can't do math. There is no scientific basis for most of this. It's largely anecdotal, and it's largely junk.
None whatsoever?
Well, if you look at the behaviors of boys and girls, you certainly see differences. But the question is where those differences come from. And the differences, at least in terms of the solid research, not the anecdotal stuff so much, is that the differences are learned. So if you have boys and girls that have different socialization, that play different games, they're given different stimuli to play with, then, of course, they're going to be different. But those differences are learned, and they're not innate. And that's an important distinction to make.
Now, in your book, you comment on how, for example, some research shows that maybe the thought was that testosterone levels differ even at early ages between boys and girls, but apparently that is not true from ages 0 to 7?
The testosterone levels are different in the womb, but from 7 months to 7 years, I think, or 10 years, there are no differences in testosterone levels. So that when you see boys doing, you know, sort of rough and tumble, horsing around, and say, well, that's a testosterone thing, it's not a testosterone thing.
It may be other things that they do. It may be learned. It might be wanting to be playful and all sorts of other things, but it's not testosterone.
And so, I mean, we're speaking about children here. Is there anything in any body of research that shows that there are structural differences in the brain? Because if I understand correctly, there is some research that shows in adults there are differences in male and female brains. They may not be profound, and we don't know what impact it has on behavior, but there are some structural differences.
And there are. But they're very minor. I mean, the people who have studied this and have written about it will be first to say, not only are they relatively minor, but as you made the important point, we don't know if there are any functional differences. We don't know what those differences in the brain mean.
Sure, because we know for a long time, for example, males have bigger brains because they're physically bigger, but they're not any smarter than women. So very often you might find a structural difference, and it's meaningless. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned earlier that there may be some anecdotal sensibility that's driving some of this. And I don't actually want to just poo-poo that too much, because I am a mother now of a 1-year-old little girl, and again, I have no scientific evidence at all, but even in the little Mommy and Me classes that we took when she was 3 months old, just out of observation, there were like 4 girls, little girls, and 2 little boys. Again, totally unscientific, but at that time, it was hard not to notice that the 3-month-old girls were babbling more and the little boys were really working on their gross motor skills. And the only reason why I mention that is I think that when parents of young children just observe that in a classroom, on the playground, it's hard for them to not think there may be something to this, that they are different.
Well, we do know that girls mature earlier than boys. So you will find, for example, children, little girls in, say, preschool or kindergarten may be more verbal than the boys, but by middle school, it's all evened out. So, you know, I think what happens is the mothers may look and see what they see at age 4 and think, that goes on for the rest of their lives, and it doesn't.
It doesn't. So how is this all working into education? I mean, it seems that for the past 15 or 20 years, we have been hearing about many schools who are saying, okay, because they think there are books out there that show that there are some differences between boys and girls, that in order to help everyone, let's separate them and have boys learn one way and girls learn another.
Well, a couple of things to say. So to start with, let's assume that boys and girls learn differently, and the evidence does not show that, but let's assume that. Then you have an argument. Why would then the idea be to separate boys and girls? Why isn't the idea to have heterogeneity in learning styles? Wouldn't you learn better if your style was A, be in a classroom with kids who also learn the B way? If you're all the same, doesn't that limit your learning abilities? I think it's quite interesting that that point isn't made well. We certainly argue for heterogeneity in classes.
So also, just to be clear, So when you say heterogeneity in learning styles, maybe all the kids, boys and girls, who are verbal, or all the kids, boys and girls, who work better with their hands?
What I was thinking of, if you could even say that, you know, they're different learning styles, wouldn't you want to mix them up in a classroom? So if I'm a verbal learner, wouldn't I do better in the classroom with kids who didn't learn in a verbal way, so I would expand my opportunities to learn differently? I mean, it seems to me that there's a real point to be made about that. And the bigger point, of course, is that the notion about learning styles is a flawed notion. There are no agreed upon learning styles.
Okay.
Yes, and what we want to say is we've got to get away from pink and blue boxes, because you can find lots of boys who are just, you know, athletic and nonverbal and jocks, but you'll find a huge percentage of boys who are very verbal, very focused, and maybe are good readers. Same thing with girls. So if you try to separate everybody by gender, you're going to be serving very ill 50% of the girls and 50% of the boys. You've got to look at the individual kids, not by gender.
And yet some schools say that when they do this, at least for certain classes, everyone's test scores rise, the boys and the girls, when they're separated by gender. The subtitle of your book is that it toxic stereotypes about our children. You want to challenge them. Basically, you call this the new segregation, and that it's hurting both boys and girls. Why do you say it's hurting them?
Well, for one thing, there are no data to prove or to show a substantial evidence that segregating kids improves their academic performance. Now, this is very hard research to do because there's so many floating pieces, too many variables. But the best studies that have been done, including studies that came out of the Department of Education's review, do not show consistent benefits for single-sex education academically. So I think that even though people say that, oh, yeah, the research shows, the question should be, well, what research exactly are you referring to? Because it just isn't really there.
And what we're saying is there can be terrific single-sex classes and terrific co-ed classes. Neither style is all bad. What we worry about are the segregated classes, which are based on these brain difference ideas, so that you're teaching all the girls as if they're just touchy-feely, sweetie little people, and you're teaching all the boys as if they want to run around and can't focus. And we know that's not true. Mm. So that we say to people who are in, you know, private schools or who have single-sex schools or their kids are going to them, make sure that the classes that they're in don't have that sort of essentialist boys are X and girls are Y, because that's what hurts boys and girls.
I'm speaking with Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett. They are co-authors of the new book, The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. So listeners, you've heard what they've had to say so far. I mean, what do you make of the idea of gender-based education? For moms and dads and teachers out there, do you think that boys and girls learn differently or not? And if you've ever experienced a girls-only or boys-only classroom, was it working? And I guess, do you hear what Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett are saying, that any gender-based stereotype in education actually harms both boys and girls? And if so, what do you think educators should be doing about it? So join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, separating classes by gender isn't very common in Boston public schools. It may be more common in many private schools in the Commonwealth. But there is a move to change that in Boston public schools. We may talk about that a little bit later. One school currently, though, that does separate boys and girls, at least for science and math classes, is the Smith Leadership Academy. It's a charter public school in Dorchester. Now, Adam Ragusea talked earlier with Carmela Sherwood, she's the school's executive director, about why she believes gender-based education is working for them.
Was it boys or girls that needed the additional help that could be provided in this kind of an environment?
Well, I don't think it's so much about them needing additional help. I think they learn in very, very different ways. Girls are usually very able to sit down and take notes and deal with a very lecture formatted type classroom. Boys, on the other hand, really need to learn by moving. They're very, very enthusiastic about their answers, and they're loud and they're boisterous. And I think that when they're taught in a way with a teacher that can meet those needs, they learn a lot better.
About how long have you been experimenting with this?
We're going into our 9th year.
Wow. So what kind of impact have you seen?
One of the things we have found that's very, very interesting is when the girls come early on, they're moving straight forward. We're seeing a lot of them on honor roll in math and science, and boys move at a slower pace. But by the time they get to 8th grade, they're right up there with the girls. But don't have a control group. There's just way too many variables to actually come up with this actually is the reason why students are doing better or they're doing worse. Works for us from a very cultural or school cultural sense.
I have to ask, who's testing better, the boys or the girls?
At this point, it appears that the girls are definitely testing a lot better.
A lot better?
A lot better.
Huh. What do the students say about their experience of being split up into single-sex classes for math and science?
All of the students will tell you they really like the fact that they're with just girls or just boys. I think it gives them a nice sense of relief because they do have co-ed classes in social studies and English. So it gives them an opportunity to just sort of breathe and really, really be themselves and not worry about it. And I think having them separated takes away that worry of, I can't answer that question in science because I won't look very feminine or I won't look like a girl and I like that boy over there. So you take all of that out of the equation, which is very, very prevalent in middle school when they're starting to discover themselves and they're starting to discover boys or girls.
If it's so effective, have you thought about going single sex across the board?
Well, the reason we haven't is we feel that it's very, very important for them to interact with each other in English and social studies because those are areas where we often have Socratic seminars and there needs to be a lot of dialogue and sharing and the celebration of women thinking one way and men thinking another. So we've never really thought about expanding it to English or social studies because there are specific things that we want students to learn and achieve while they're in the humanities classes.
Carmela Sherwood, thank you very much.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Adam. It's been a joy speaking with you.
Carmela Sherwood is the executive director of the Smith Leadership Academy, a charter public school in Dorchester. So, Rosalind Barnett, what do you make of this on-the-ground take of gender-based education?
Well, it's complicated, but I do want to comment on a point that she made, and it's repeated a lot, and that is that boys learn by action. They need to be moving around. They need to, you know, keep themselves going, and that's how they learn, where girls, not so much. And one of the things about that statement, because it's repeated and sort of makes sense, we don't really question it, but There's some research being done by a man who's a professor of
kinesthesiology.
Thank you. And cognitive science. And he's done the actual hard work about how physical activity affects learning. And I interviewed him. I called him because his papers don't really talk about gender much. And I asked him whether he saw any gender differences in these phenomena. He said no. He's looked for gender differences, and he does not find any ever, which means that if you think boys need to be moving, you may, as a teacher, set your class up like that. But if you don't think girls are, you don't. But in fact, girls learn just like boys. They are learning benefits by their moving around. And I think that's one of the ways in which stereotypes get in the way. Because the notion of boys being physical fits the stereotype, but the notion of girls being physical does not. So if you're designing a girl's classroom, not having the data, but just having stereotypes might set you up in that particular way.
Well, we've got a lot of listeners who have a lot to say about this topic, so I want to invite them in. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we are talking with Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett. They are co-authors of a new book called The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. Let's start in South Boston, where Renna is on the line. You're on the air, Renna.
Hi. I went to a really great all-girls school in Massachusetts from 7th through 12th grade. And I guess my interest or my value from that school wasn't so much that girls learned differently, but not being with boys allowed me to be the captain of the debate team. My sister was the president of the school. And I think it just taught me that girls can do whatever they want. And I think your previous speaker also, or your previous guest said, you know, not having the distraction of having boys in the classroom or intimidation or any of that stuff allowed me to really excel academically. So I think the quality of an all-girls education is more having to do with that than necessarily whether boys and girls learned it.
Mm-hmm. Renna, thank you so much for your call. Let me just turn your comment back to Carol and Rosalind.
Well, I think I went to both girls' schools, all college, girls' college, and to mixed schools. And you can have wonderful schools that are all-girls schools. They're terrific. And you can have wonderful co-ed schools. So, you know, we're not saying you shouldn't have any of these things. We're just saying when you do this, don't fall into the trap that men and women think differently, because here's something that can happen. There was a recent study of teaching in math, and they found out that the teachers who taught in the all-boys schools were different than the teachers that taught the all-girls classes, because the boys were taught argument more and the girls were not. And since that's the hallmark of science is arguing back and forth, what was happening was the girls weren't getting the same kind of education that the boys were.
So it was the quality of instruction that mattered more than anything.
And the assumption, I think, that girls don't want to argue and girls want to be quiet and cooperative. Well, that doesn't always work.
Well, let's get another call in here. Lisa is calling from Cumberland, Rhode Island. You're on the air, Lisa.
Hi. I think this is a really interesting discussion, because I think that there's a real danger here in teaching girls and boys that the world doesn't work that way. And the world I think we live in means that you have to learn to deal with and manage and address people regardless of gender. And I think that to the point that girls should definitely be taught not to be afraid of math, but my kids have had fabulous teachers. I have boys and a girl. And I think it has to do with the teachers recognizing the personality differences of the kids and not so much saying, well, that's because she's a girl and he's a boy.
Lisa, thank you so much for your call. I want to get another voice in here, one from a teacher. Barbara's calling from Cohasset. You're on the air, Barbara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just immediately grabbed my phone because I started having flashbacks to the year I was teaching eighth grade. And I, for some reason, this group of 200 kids total in the eighth grade, there was it was about 70% male and 30% female. And just all the teachers who had been around for years said that that class was just overall much more immature. And within that class, I had one first period class that was about 17 girls and 5 boys, and then a later class that was the reverse. And the dominated class by girls, I could run like a college seminar. Huh. And the afternoon class, it was just it was a whole different environment. And actually, the boys really gave the girls a hard time. And I don't know if it's just that group, but I definitely agree with the fact that I think, you know, male and female brains is probably minor differences in learning that wouldn't warrant separating the classes, but I just think the social piece, which a lot of people have said, is just so significant, especially probably in that those middle school years. And I just think it's great to have the choice. I think I would have loved the choice to be able to say, you know what, I want to be in an all-female class for this particular subject or for this year.
Barbara, thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Barbara, but I want to be able to turn what you're saying back to my guests here, because this is something that's come up a couple times that, okay, so there may not be ascribable differences in the actual brain, but that all the other sort of ancillary physiological and social differences matter more in this case.
Well, there's certainly something to be said about all that. I think the data, however, are very unclear. That if you look at how do you measure schools? And you measure two things anyway. One is academic performance, and the other is social behavioral things. And if you look at whatever data there are, and again, I want to qualify, it's not very hot, you don't see any advantage to single-sex schools. For example, there's some data that suggests that in all boys' schools, there's more competition, there's more macho behavior, and more disruption, actually, than when boys are in co-ed classes. Now, people can find examples where those data don't fit. But with all girls' schools, people also find that girls are more bitchier, meaner, more competitive. So I think it's hard to say exactly, but it's not clear.
In the last minute or so that we have, I do want to ask you this question about sort of where all this came from. Because, when Title IX was passed a long time ago, there was this thought, and actually for several decades after that, and we've heard it today in some of our callers, that in mixed gendered classes, girls weren't getting called on as much, they weren't asked to perform at the same level as boys, et cetera. So Title IX helped reverse a lot of that, and girls' scores rised. Then in the late 90s, we saw concern about the other end, that teaching was too focused towards young girls and boys were falling behind. So we've got this constant push-pull of what to do for which gender. Where does that leave us today, and where do you think we should go from here?
Well, we should not put, again, the pink and blue boxes. Some boys are doing not great, but you look at it, you break it down. Affluent suburban boys are doing just fine. Inner city black and Hispanic boys are doing badly. It's not true that boys are over across the board are failing. So you have to look at that. I think the key is that we always pitting boys against girls. You've got to look at the individual student. How do we tailor things for kids who learn with A style or B style or C style, whether they're boys or girls?
Well, Carol Rivers and Rosalind Barnett are co-authors of the forthcoming The Truth About Girls and Boys, Challenging Toxic Stereotypes About Our Children. Wonderful to speak with both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
thank
you. Listeners, it was great to have you as well. There's a lot of you I couldn't get to, and I'm sorry, but there's always our website. Would love to hear your comments there. We're at radioboston.org. While we're on the subject of the back-to-school season, some advice for the region's incoming class of college freshmen.
Our friend David Bernstein at the Boston Phoenix started a little hashtag game on Twitter last night. Hashtag boss frosh advice.
A few Twitter citizens offered some sincere counsel, like, if you're from somewhere warm, don't go overboard buying winter clothes. I still haven't used the ski mask mom insisted I buy.
But most of the tweets have been sarcastic gestures of hostility toward our new 18-year-old neighbors. Here are a few samples.
Amble down the sidewalk, four abreast, yakking away. No one in this town is in much of a hurry.
Our blue-collar neighborhood pubs love impromptu drop-ins. Be sure to lecture your new friends on politics and culture.
Those lawn chairs in the street after a snowstorm? Free furniture, dude!
Best to just stop right there in the rotary until you can figure it out.
Here's one you have to dedicate a little extra attention to follow. To get the best pizza in East Boston, go to South Station and get tickets for the Downeaster headed north.
And here's perhaps the most crushing of them all. We wish you had gotten into that school in New York, too.
Oh, ouch.
Indeed. I myself could not resist joining in, so here now is my sincere advice for Boston's incoming freshmen. Remind everyone giving you grief on Twitter that you're propping up their economy. And then demand to see photographic evidence of just how cool they were when they were 18 and clueless.
140 characters, Adam? Impressive.
It was two tweets.
Well, up next, sports with Bill Littlefield, and Adam tests his knowledge of couture with Boston's biggest fashionista. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.